Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It is Friday, March 22nd, 5:30 a.m. Central Time. As I speak, the markets are lower. Matt Bennett is joining me here this morning. Matt, how did your bracket hold up in the first round of the games yesterday?
You know, a couple of games bit me a little bit. I was not expecting, of course, I was worried about Illinois playing BYU on Saturday, and they got beat. So that's kind of nice. I'm not saying that it's going to be a cakewalk. The team that beat them actually looked pretty tough. So, you know, I missed that game, and then I missed the Kentucky game. I wasn't heartbroken over that either. But at the end of the day, I had a pretty decent day on my bracket, actually. Most, you know, there wasn't a lot of huge upsets. And, you know, usually you can kind of plan on maybe a 215 or something like that. But, yeah, that Kentucky game, that was kind of a shocker. The team they played against, that was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was definitely a good one to watch. So to start off with this morning, it appears that the Biden administration has finalized a rule to rapidly shift towards zero emission vehicles. The rule will require automakers to increase EV sales and also decrease carbon emissions from gas-powered cars. The rule applies to vehicle models between 2027 and 2032. It also offers flexibility for automakers. Automakers will have the option to increase EV sales to 67% of total U.S. sales by 2032, or they can choose to boost EV sales to 56% and also increase hybrid sales to 13%, while reducing sales of conventional combustion engine vehicles to 29%. The ethanol and oil industries claim the rule will make gas-powered cars too expensive or unavailable for most Americans. In your opinion, what are some of the implications for ethanol and biofuels when it comes to this rule?
You know, I guess the first thing I think of is you just said a whole lot. It's kind of complicated. There's a lot going on there. Is that all going to come to pass? We're going to have a new administration potentially, you know, in a few months here. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't want to go into politics too much, but I'd be surprised, you know, if Biden's the guy. I mean, maybe he is. I don't know. It's just such a messed up ordeal. And so, and who knows, you know, I mean, it appears Trump's going to be the guy that's going to run on the other side. But, you know, there's so much up in the air. And so whenever you start talking about all these massive shifts, I don't know. I still think that the grid is going to struggle with any sort of a massive uptake of EVs personally, but I guess time will tell. You know, I've talked about this a lot. I talk about it almost every presentation that I make. It's not that I'm anti-EV necessarily, but I can't make it work with the way that they're currently made and how they currently operate. I just can't. I do too much driving. I'm all over the place, you know, and 400 miles or whatever most of them have a range of isn't enough for me on a typical day in the winter whenever I've got to get out and speak. So it'd be very interesting to see how this all plays out. But I would say that everything they're proposing right now, it would be shocking if, you know, it actually came to pass. I think some form of it will. There's definitely a move towards EV.
Yeah, definitely. There's a place for them, but overall, it's hard to see them doing what they're actually proposing. So the USDA will release its prospective plantings report next week. Our friends at Ag Market are projecting corn acres to reach 91.5 million this season, down 3.3% from last year's USDA acreage estimate. Soybean acres are estimated at 86.1 million, up 3% from last year's USDA estimate. All wheat acres are anticipated to reach 46.2 million, down almost 7% from USDA's estimate last year. So can you expand on these projected acreage numbers that you and your team released yesterday?
Yeah, so essentially we'll start with wheat because, you know, with wheat, you lost winter acreage. We know that. And USDA even said that we lost over 2 million acres, I believe closer to 2.5. And then as far as spring wheat's concerned, with all the growers that we talk to, it just seems like there's definitely a trend away from some spring wheat acres, based mostly on price. And so we've had some pretty strong, you know, conversations with guys. At least their constitution was pretty strong about it. You know, hey, I'm not going to plant near the spring wheat acres that I usually do. So we feel like we'll lose another million there. So that's kind of where we came in with the 46.2. So you might ask, well, how's come the combination of corn and beans isn't maybe a little more rich? It's a very similar combination to like the 178.5 that USDA had last year for final as far as corn and beans were concerned. You look at corn and beans last year, there was 11 million acre difference, 94 down to 83, corn versus beans. And we've seen, obviously, beans have performed better than corn, even though they both lost ground in the last year. So we decided 91.5 and 86.1 is kind of where we're going to hang our hat for now. Now, I will tell you, Kenzie, I would not be shocked if they come in over 93. We had such a fantastic fall last year. Most everyone did everything they wanted to do. So, you know, you've got to think we've quantified a lot of acres. But the tricky thing is that when we were quantifying those acres, corn penciled better than beans. Like I would say in the I states, for instance, now I think the beans pencil a little bit better than corn in a lot of those areas. And so maybe some swing acres go over to soybeans from corn. It's just, is it going to be enough? So, you know, I think 91.5 and 86.1 is a pretty good stab at it for now. And I'm not going to be making any trade recommendations based upon that because it's definitely going to be a tough number to gauge.
Right. It will be interesting to see how that report comes out. U.S. corn export sales declined last week. Net corn sales of 1.2 million metric tons were down 8% from the previous week, but up 10% from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net soybean sales of 494,000 metric tons were up 31% from the previous week and up 86% from the prior four-week average. China was the largest buyer for the week. Wheat sales reductions of 109,600 metric tons, a marketing year low, were down noticeably from the previous week and from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest wheat buyer for the week. China canceled large volumes of U.S. SRW wheat last week. Cancellations from the Philippines and South Korea were also noted. So with the exception of corn, export sales continue to struggle. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what we saw with sales last week?
Yeah, overall, the corn sales were down week on week, but at the same time, you know, we're churning out over a million tons a week, which is certainly nice to see. This is the time whenever you're going to see shipments, of course, transition from beans over to corn, mostly because you've got so many beans available, of course, in South America. Still getting sales on beans over almost 500,000 tons. A little bit of a shock. Last week, you had 600. I mean, you know, we've had a couple of pretty decent weeks, but at the same time, it's kind of surprising, and I guess it's surprising, especially to see China in there whenever U.S. beans are actually out of the market. I mean, we're like 40 bucks a ton higher than both Brazil and Argentina. As far as corn's concerned, we're very competitive. And so I got to think corn exports are going to keep going like this. If you keep seeing weather issues with this safrinha crop, my personal opinion is that the USDA will have to adjust U.S. exports higher. And that's something that we thought a few months ago would never be said by any of us. But it certainly looks like that's a possibility. So we'll just have to see how their crop turns out.
When it comes to wheat sales, as I mentioned, we had a gob of cancellations. I know it's hard for you to say, but do you think that's more, we'll see more to come?
That's a really tough question to answer. Yesterday's wheat sales were no shock because of cancellations. We all knew that it was going to be a tough number. I don't know. I mean, can we see more coming? It's possible, but at the same time, is that set up for a bigger purchase on down the road? You know, China's the one doing the canceling. And, you know, I'm not trying to, be a jerk about it. It's just that typically when they cancel, they buy on the other side of it. Now, you still see all this cheap Russia wheat out there. And I've said this several times. I think it's certainly a possibility that they're going to cancel some of these sales, you know, that were actually higher levels, you know, and go towards Russian wheat. So we'll see how that all occurs. I don't foresee them canceling as much wheat as what they have to date, personally, but that's just my opinion.
Despite declining commodity prices, Louis Dreyfus achieved its second consecutive year of profits over $1 billion in 2023. Grain traders' profits have soared in recent years due to crop disruptions and losses brought on by the war in Ukraine. Market volatility did ease in 2023. However, traders were able to capitalize on price swings and market shortages. Louis Dreyfus has increased its investment in new assets as a result of recent profitability. Among other things, the company is expanding its domestic ethanol operations. How are farmers supposed to feel about being mostly unprofitable while commercials are essentially just raking in the money?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. And so typically when you see someone like this profitable, it's not necessarily due to the fact that they're making it all off the producer. It's due to a heck of a lot of good spread trading, you know, very good as far as margins go, you know, like, and I'm talking about like basis levels. Okay. So you give the farmer what you would think is a pretty decent basis at the time. I mean, stop and think about it. Over the last year, you've had basis levels, due to the drought in the West that have been absolutely incredible for most people. And I'm talking like for the 22 crop, 22, you had a drought, and there were $2 over basis whenever you get out into Kansas, in some of the areas that were corn deficit. So it's not like they were just taking advantage of the drought. I mean, they had to move the grain around, but they did a darn good job of trading it. They did a good, darn good job of handling basis spreads. Once again, I've got to think that, and I'm not sticking up for them. I don't work for them by any means. I just don't think that it just because they're making money, they're making it all for the farmer. I think they're doing a good job of trading their positions. And, you know, now they can't, I want to be clear, they can't take net positions whenever you're, like, for instance, in the elevator business. You can't have net positions in excess of your bushels. I mean, you have to stay within confines, but as far as spreads go and whatnot, you know, since those are offsetting positions, sky's the limit. So certainly nice to see someone in agriculture making money, but it's very frustrating for the producer. And I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people that are upset and feel like they made it off the farmer.
Most definitely. So the USDA released weekly drought monitor data yesterday. Drought conditions throughout the Corn Belt were mostly unchanged last week. However, the southern portions of Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan all received rainfall, which improved conditions. Northwest Ohio also saw conditions improve. Drought conditions across the High Plains were largely unchanged. When we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 34%, soybeans 30%, winter wheat 12%, spring wheat 30%, and cattle country 17%. What are you hearing from farmers across the Corn Belt concerning the drought? Obviously, the area is forecast to receive a substantial amount of rain here in the next few days, which poses its own problems.
You know, the drought certainly is something that is frustrating for guys in Iowa and in Minnesota, more so as far as how much people have talked about it this winter. You know, they're talking about, hey, you know, this is as dry as what we've been this time of year. I totally get that, but you are expecting quite a bit of rainfall to come through over the next several days. I think we talked about this the other day. Most producers would say they'd rather have a dry spring than a wet one. Mm-hmm. But it's complicated this time of the year because you'd like to have some subsoil moisture going in to the planting season. Yeah, it'd be nice to be able to plant in the dust of Benzel Bust. Everybody knows that, you know, you're looking at getting a really good uniform, even stand, which is exactly what we need if we want to chase these higher yields, and we certainly need them in a year like this. But I don't want to get into a wet type spring pattern, but at the same time, it's not going to be up to us. It's not our choice. And so I think that the drought's something that probably is going to be mitigated next time this week. I think that your maps might look a little better. You're not going to fix a drought with one rain, but a lot of time, again, rain begets rain. So there's a chance that you'll see some continued follow-up rain. I just really hope that we don't get into a wet spring, because I think most producers would prefer where we sit today versus fighting mud.
So the monthly cattle on feed report will be released later today. Cattle on feed as of March 1st is estimated at 100.9% of year ago levels. Placements during February are projected at 106.4% compared to last year. The significant uptick in placements can be attributed to the brutal winter weather that we had back in January. For a little over a week, transportation and weekly cattle auctions were hindered. That resulted in fewer January feeder cattle placements, and we're making up for that in February. Marketings during February are estimated at 103.8% year over year. Today's report will be released at 2 o'clock Central Time. When we look at the projected placements for February, this looks like a rather bearish report, but we've talked about it before. The fundamentals are strong. And we've also seen cash cattle climb for 4 consecutive weeks. Are those facts, are they important enough to overshadow a bearish cattle on feed report if this does come out as it looks like it's going to?
I mean, everyone knows where this thing's going to come in for the most part. It's going to be over 100. If you look at both January and February numbers combined, I mean, you're not looking at anything that's going to scare anybody too much, in my opinion. It's just that January numbers that were released in February were projected to be maybe even under 90, you know, as far as placements were concerned. That's not going to be the that was not the case. And so that makes this report probably a little more bearish looking, whereas last month's wasn't quite as bullish looking. Right. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, my thought on this is that we know, fundamentally speaking, it takes forever to fix a shortage in cattle or to build the cattle herd inventory. Most of your traders that maybe want to push this thing and see cattle as a good investment, they're not going to buy cattle ahead of a supposed bearish report. I think you're going to have to get on out a little ways. It looks like this market's kind of leveled off. You're going to have to get out a little ways, in my opinion, for people to want to really invest in this and maybe drive it to new highs. I think those highs are still potential. But yeah, I don't know. Everyone knows what the number is going to be. I really don't expect any sort of massive sell-off or anything unless, you know, it would be like a 110 type number. You know, 105, 106, I think, is what everyone is expecting.
Mm-hmm. That report, again, will be released here at 2 o'clock this afternoon. That is all we have for you guys this morning. Matt, thank you for joining me today and all this week while Joe has been gone.
Absolutely.
Have a great weekend. Everyone have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.